Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, we're getting ready to discuss kind of a sobering discussion on facing a disability and how most of us, if we live past a certain age, will face some kind of a disability either in our life or maybe a loved one's life. And how does estate planning help or lack of estate planning hurt such a situation?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a topic that we need to talk about because it is sobering. It is really not an exciting discussion, but yet this discussion may actually drive more people to do estate planning other than having wealth and believing that you have a tax problem. Mm. So many people are ultimately driven to get good estate planning done when they stop and think about the chances that what if I was ever in a position like, and they usually think through their brain like my parents were. So specifically, if you've had a parent and you've had to walk that journey of somebody having health issues, of trying to use a financial power of attorney, having the luxury of a trust that actually worked well, these things shape our perception. These things ultimately give us either a good perception of this works well or this was a nightmare and I don't want to do this to my own kids. And then interestingly enough, and it's probably something that if we thought about, most people would reach a conclusion to go, oh yeah, that makes total sense, which is then the amount of wealth that someone has is a deciding factor to do estate planning. And it's actually a pretty big disparaging number, which is if someone is in poverty level, then they have almost no documents at all. Mm-hmm. And so a large – and since 25% or just under 25% of the American population would actually have no more than a high school education and have a tendency to then not have as much financial opportunities in their life – it makes sense then that the numbers are actually what the numbers are, that there is a high percentage of individuals that have never done estate planning. So with all these combined, the necessity is that every person have a few of these documents. Every person should have a will. Every person should have a financial power of attorney. Every person should have a healthcare power of attorney, and then also an end of life and or what's called as a durable power of attorney, and so or living will. So these documents are critical to ensure somebody's care should you experience a health incident. So we're going to talk about disability. What I'm not talking about is that you're on SSDI, Social Security Disability Income. I'm not talking that disability. My term of disability means that you have had a health incident and you need someone else to stand next to you and assist you for a period of time. Mm. That can often be just for a short period of time and then you pass away. Or it could be for a 10-year period because you have mental incapacitation, you have Alzheimer's, and you have severe memory loss. Those are the times when this can extend for a very long period of time. So I'm talking about more a health incident. And the reason I use the word disability is because I don't want to narrow the discussion to just mental incapacitation. Really, it is – I've had clients who are at the end of life who can't hold a pen. So then if you use checks and if you need to type or to, passwords to get into your user profiles and you can't use your finger, you no longer have the dexterity, then you need someone to help you, even if you can carry on a conversation. So disability is intended to be a much broader term, which means I need help. There's a reason that something has happened and you need assistance. So that's what we're going to talk about today is what does it mean that you need assistance and what should your estate plan be thinking of and what should you be looking at? Because Most documents are not really built for this, and so we just got to talk about the topic in general.
So they're not built for this. So what happens if you have no estate plan?
Yeah, I just told you that a large percentage, actually, of the population have nothing.
So then what happens to them?
Yeah, and that's a pickle. On the financial side, then the extreme example is that no one has access to an account, to a checking account, to a financial account, to be able to direct an IRA or other tax-deferred account to get your required minimum distributions or to withdraw money to pay for bills. That's the extreme, that people have not been either added to accounts. So that's the poor man's way to do estate planning is add people to your account. I don't suggest it. It's better to get a financial power of attorney than to add others to your account. Mm. But if nothing has been done, then the extreme example is that we would need to go to court to get legal authority around you. And that alone is an expensive and a hassle. It takes time. In my young career, I remember that a son was living with his mom and called me, said, I need help. My mom can no longer write the bills. She's really losing her ability to assist herself. I've been writing the checks out, but she's been signing them. But she can no longer sign them. And so now I'm stuck. And so we had to put forward a petition in the Michigan courts, because at that time I was living in Michigan right after I graduated from law school. And when you do that, you have to give notice to everybody in the family who has an interest. And so we had to reach out to the two sisters. And boy, did that start a war. And so each sister who had literally not talked to their mom in over 5 years hired attorneys, and now we're in a mess. $15,000 later, the court says, you guys are a disaster, and so we're just going to put the court in charge of all the assets. Mm-hmm. And so then the court took it over. Now, that's an extreme example, but that is my experience. That's actually happened in my career.
Yeah.
So there's the extreme. Does that happen all the time? No, absolutely not. So if you've added somebody to your bank account, if you have children, if you have someone else on your account, again, that is not recommended by any stretch of the imagination.
And
however,
why is that not recommended?
Yeah, because most of the time it's done inaccurately, and it gives ownership rights to that money instead of custodial rights only. So when you use a financial power of attorney, the agent, the person who is going to help you, is exactly that. They're an agent. They now have fiduciary duties by law. And so when they walk in, they're acting as a custodian, not as an owner. Mm. So then when you pass away, beneficiary designations will be followed, and or the will will be followed, and or the statute will be followed, so that things will be split equally, probably as you intended it. However, most of the time what I see is that ownership is that add my child to the account is ownership, and now we have some legal pickles. Mm. I've also seen that without power and someone just comes in and takes ownership, it can start causing more family disputes and separation. There's much more distrust between the other siblings, and so it just adds multiple problems. And here's one last thing is that, again – I've seen this in my career. I know that this sounds extreme, but this has happened, which is now the owner or the person who is on the account, out of good intent, this person was not stealing from mom. They were there as a safety net, and they ended up having financial problems, getting garnished. But because she was on her mom's account, guess whose else account was garnished? Mom's account. So if there's creditor problems, if there's divorce issues, if there's a car accident, so what it does is it exposes your account to the child's potential problems. And by the way, if we knew there was a problem, we would probably fix it. right? And so if I knew I was going to be in a car accident driving to the studio today, I would have just stayed in bed and called you and said, Mark, I can't. I'm going to get in a car accident. See you next week. And so if I know there's a problem, I would avoid the problem. That is the issue, which is these things rise up in our lives unexpectedly. So when we do things like put our children on an account, put our children on a home, please don't do that, then something that happens in their life is unexpected, and it errantly or unexpectedly then exposes your assets to their issue. And so it's always better to do estate planning, always better. And again, I understand that there is a cost associated with it there, but I would be an advocate of having a will package over zero. And you know how I feel about wills, is that I don't like them. I always want people to use a revocable living trust because there's more protection. This series, you'll kind of will uncover some of that. But the bottom line is that some estate planning is better than no estate planning. Sure. Specifically for that last reason right there.
So in some of the documents that you have reviewed, what are some problems you see there? What's some general real common mistakes and issues that seem to come up in the few plans that you have reviewed that aren't really up to snuff?
Yeah, and I've reviewed hundreds and hundreds of other people's documents. In other words, documents that come usually from other attorneys. And what I see is, number one, there's a lot of templated documents going around. And so specifically in a will package, there's standard language. Most attorneys, if I could be so bold, don't charge appropriately. They charge less than what they should be for their work. And so therefore, they rely upon either their staff, internal staff, but they use a template. I use my a family member of mine to where his document gave everything to himself in his will. And what? Yes. Again, these are true stories, people. It's hard to imagine. And they used an attorney. Well, what is that? Okay, clearly that was not the intent. And could I unwind that in court if I had to? Yes, I could clearly go back to the attorney and say, you screwed up. Give me a letter that says that was not the intent. I didn't mean to leave everything to myself. But what it clearly demonstrates is that they used a document and they started with the wife and then they changed to the husband and couldn't find all the places where they had to change the name. So all they're doing is they're using a templated document, right, and someone in-house is just changing names and they missed one. And that's a bummer. So
that's a bummer.
So yeah. Fortunately, they did not die with that document. So and that was before I became an attorney. So that was an older document. There's another problem is that documents are very outdated. They're 20 years old or more. And life changes too dramatically to have a 20-year-old document, whether it's your will, whether it's your financial power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney. All of these things have revolving doors of law, of taxes, and just life changing for the individual who's creating them. So so I get a lot of clients in that says, well, that's 20 years old and my children are still going to, to their uncle as a guardian. How old are your kids? Oh, they're in their 30s. So nice. So age is a problem with most documents. Most documents use general powers. I give all my power. So a financial power of attorney, I've seen this more times than I would like to see it there. But what it does is it says any power that I as the principal, the one who's making it, have, I give to my agent. Now, you would think that that means all power. But go to a bank with that and say, I need to open up a new account. And they'll look at that and they'll go, but there's no banking instructions. But the document says that I have all power, like the person that I'm representing. Nope, that's not specific enough. So a general all-inclusive power is actually rejected. And again, this has happened. These are true stories. And so then we're stuck and we have to then start hiring attorneys to push the bank. And it's really fun dealing with their legal departments. So there's a laundry list of things that I don't appreciate about templated standard documents. But the last thing as we head into break is that what most financial power of attorneys do is they open up the coffers, but with no guidelines. Mm. So it's a here's the authority for you just to go into the account, but there's nothing more than the power to operate the account. So there's no guidelines, there's no requests from the principal on how to use the money. And in a financial power of attorney, unless it's requested, there's actually no legal duty to do an accounting. You have to keep records, but you don't have to give it to anybody, unlike a trust. So these are a few of the things that I see all the time in documents I review, and these are the things that bother me as an estate planner.
Yeah, it's very complicated. You don't want to be left holding the bag, as it were, or bad documents. And Paul can help you with getting the right kinds of documents, the right kind of trust and financial planning. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland on the Legacy and Faith Show this week, talking about how to get ready to face a disability and having the right kinds of estate planning going on in the background. We talked about some of the horror stories that Paul has seen in inadequate estate planning. One of the things that I'm wondering about, too, is that estate plan, is it work in Washington? Does it have the right kinds of requirements for Washington? And is that a high bar for Washington State?
Yeah, so now you're going to start asking me about specific Washington law, and this radio show is going to get really boring really fast. But let's go to the Revised Code of Washington, shall we? Because what attorney doesn't want to take people to the Revised Code of Washington? It's just a thrilling exercise. There's one thing to have a legal sufficiency, meaning the document was created and the attorney didn't commit malpractice. Okay. But the bar for that versus what does the client want? Well, there's a whole different world. And that's really maybe the objection I have of things I've seen, which is this is a standard document and it doesn't reflect what I'm hearing from the person in front of me. There's a disconnect to the document meeting a legal sufficiency, yes, versus actually stating the heart and the passion of how I want to be cared for should I ever need to use this document from the person in front of me.
How does Washington State compare to other states? Average or higher bar or lower bar or easier going?
So I'm also licensed in Michigan, even though I don't really do work back there. But I am licensed there, so I'm familiar with their laws. And in these areas, what I think the general thought process is that we want to make it available. So if you look at the statute for wills, it doesn't change very much. We want that to be a stalwart for law because a lot of people use wills and they're older and we know this. So changing the law in wills is done with great trepidation. Same thing with financial powers of attorney. Even though we just completely revamped our power of attorney section in the law several years ago. And the objective was to make it easier and give broader power. So think about this from the client perspective versus the legislative intent, which is the legislative intent was to create a broad power. But I just told you that institutions don't like broad powers. And so now we have a conflict, which is we're trying to make a more accessible document and to give power away easier. But I don't want power given away more easily. I want the specific powers that my clients want to give to be available. But other clients may desire to make sure that there are strong boundaries around the power that they give during their lifetime versus when they ultimately lose it at death. So I'm actually not a huge fan of what the legislative body did in the Estate Planning Power of Attorney Act in the past years. They've made it more general, more all-inclusive. And I think the reason is because they're trying to make it easier in use, but I'm not so sure that that was actually accomplished.
Is that because so many people don't have an estate plan, maybe?
Well, right. Yeah. And that,
trying to compensate
that's a problem,
for that.
Too, is that if you don't have anything, then it's going to then even these more broad powers aren't available to you. Even recently, I've seen documents, and I'm not so sure that people aren't using the old templated documents still, that they haven't gone back to the statute and updated their documents. So the law has a couple of things with a financial power of attorney, and these are good things, okay? So here's a couple of good things that we have to do. Number one is that if someone is using a financial power of attorney for on behalf of somebody, so now the agent is trying to use it, number one is that they have to do whatever is in the reasonable expectation of the principal. Okay, so if I was helping my parents, let's use a kind of get people on a story that we can follow in these examples. So if one of my parents needed assistance and I had a financial power of attorney, then I'm supposed to act in accordance with their reasonable expectation. So that's a current expectation. This is referring to if one of my parents gives me a verbal request, that I'm supposed to follow that current verbal request. It's not the expectations that are placed in the document, okay? It is a current reasonable. Now, why do we use the word reasonable expectation? Because what if one of my parents is off their rocker? And so and what if they're asking me to do things that are unreasonable or are going to harm them?
Right.
Well, then I have to have the ability to pull back from that unreasonableness in whose discretion and my sole discretion based upon the circumstances, based upon how I feel about my parents and my own viewpoints and everything else. Then I have to go and say what's in their best interest. So if I can't follow their direct instructions, if I'm getting any, then I have to make an assessment of what's in their best interest. And I'm supposed to do this in good faith. So what that means is honesty. I'm supposed to be doing it with honesty. So I'm not supposed to be stealing from my parents. Okay. And those are the sad stories. And unfortunately, I think maybe all of us have heard of the stories. I mean, Aunt Jody had all her money ripped off from my cousin and all this other stuff. So unfortunately, that happens in this type of storyline where someone is leaning into another person to trust and they're not doing what they're supposed to. So the law has a couple very good things, which is find out what they want. Follow it to the best of your ability and or if it's reasonable. And if not, then do what's in their best interest. So that's a pretty large scope. Again, broad strokes in the statute, broad strokes in the intent, but just be nice about it is the bottom line. Act loyally. So you're supposed to do it for them and them alone. So you can't do things for other people. That's a massive gap, by the way. What if there was a disabled child in the family? What if one of the children was having a legitimate financial emergency and everybody in the family knows that mom or dad would rescue them and give them a loan or do something and we'll figure it out later. This statute says you have to do it with loyalty to the person alone. Mm-hmm. And so I have yet to see a financial power of attorney that allows to take care of other people. And so there's a disconnect. So in essence, that's the broadness of the statute, is that in a financial power of attorney, there's broad strokes. You're supposed to do what they say. If not, what's in their best interest, and be honest with it. But you can't take care of other people because of that loyalty factor. These things, while the law is trying to do good, I find are not specific enough for the clients and for the people that I serve.
Estate planning, how it affects your facing of a disability in your life or your maybe spouse's life. So important to have the right kind of planning. People want to find out more about your services. Paul, how do they do that?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. You can find past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, and ways to communicate with us. It's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.